From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made every day in homes across America. When a senior citizen falls or injures him or herself and needs care, sometimes that care is handled through a brief stay at a hospital and then a return home. But often more care is needed, and families begin the process of navigating the elder care system. Sometimes nursing homes, assisted living facilities, hospice care. They might desire to be at home more often, but the question is, can they afford it? How do they do that? Roughly 1.4 million Americans live in nursing homes, and even more seniors find themselves having to make difficult health and legal decisions related to aging. Monroe County is hosting its annual Elder Law Fair and public hearing this month. It offers free legal advice to community members. We're going to preview that event this hour. You can hear all about that coming up, and we're going to hear some personal stories about what local families have learned about the system and elder rights. It's also a very good time to have this conversation because there are some possible changes coming. Everything from Medicaid funding, how that could impact gaps in quality of care, to changes in who can sue and why. There's a lot going on. So let me go ahead and say hello to our guests in studio. Rick Marchese is a partner at Woods Oviatt Gilman. Rick, nice having you in studio. Thanks for being
Thank you for having me here.
Catherine Adamidis is a staff attorney at Legal Assistance of Western New York. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Evan.
Also here is Kristen Johnson, a partner at Pelletier & Johnson. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Evan.
And Lori Cash is back on the program. She's an advocate for nursing home reform. And Lori is also the founder of LastStopMovie.com, which is what, Lori?
It's a website dedicated to shining a light on trying to get nursing home reform. And it was a result of a terrible injury that my mother's suffered at the hands of a nursing home. And so it's used as a launch-off point everywhere from getting the comptroller to do an audit on a Department of Health and just trying to make people aware who feel they have no voice if we can try to change the conditions of nursing homes.
And we'll talk a little bit more about Lori's story. You might have heard it on this program in a previous episode. Rick also, you might have seen in the Democrat and Chronicle, wrote a piece kind of outlining your background. Why don't you tell us that personal story as a starting point for how you see this issue, Rick?
Sure, because my story is echoed time and time again in Rochester, Monroe County, and across the state. My family, very close-knit family, there's five of us, and my mom had been living with my brother for many years and declining, unfortunately, mentally. Her short-term memory was almost non-existent. It was creating havoc at home. She had fallen several times. And we were doing everything to keep her at home, and this is what families do. But it just got to the point where it wasn't tenable anymore, and there was a fall last year, or May of last year, that led to her hospitalization. And at that time, the doctors indicated that it was no longer safe for her to be at home. And then we were very abruptly thrust into the transition process of transitioning to a skilled nursing facility or a nursing home. And that is the process that's sort of dreaded by all of our practitioners because it's very, it can be dehumanizing. And so there's a whole lack of dignity in that process. And I don't think there are any bad players, but it's you're given a list of 20 nursing homes by the discharge planner at the hospital. You say they indicate you have to pick five and that you have 48 hours to do so. And if they can't find a home for mom, if we can't find a home for mom, they're going to try to find one. So all of a sudden you're thrust into this miasma of trying to find a home. In this case, for my mother to go to, and money now enters into the equation because every home wants a financial affidavit listing the assets of a potential nursing home applicant. And frankly, if you're not showing a lot of money, and my mom doesn't or did not have a lot of money, it was just a house and a small pension and her Social Security. Now it's difficult to get into a good home, and it struck me at that time as an elder law practitioner of how what an awful process this is. We have people who have lived their whole life, raised their families, war veterans, mothers who've stayed at home, raised their kids, wonderful families. They've worked their whole life, and you know, now at the end of trying to keep mom or dad at home, you're thrust into this pick five nursing homes. And if you haven't done your homework in advance, or you haven't consulted with maybe an attorney or a geriatric care manager, it can be very confusing. And there's a lot of guilt, frankly, associated with that too, because you feel like you're letting down mom. And I went through that personally, as did my sister and my brothers and everybody in my family. But, I would say for my mom, she's in we're very happy with her quality of care right now. She's in a local facility.
How did you resolve things?
Well, I was lucky because I know people who did some favors, frankly, for me. I called the geriatric care manager, who's a friend of mine, and she was able to, make a couple of phone calls and get my mom into a good facility. But that's not, and my mom is just a straight Medicaid patient, which means she didn't have the money to privately pay at $13,000 a month for many, many months. Families don't have that option. I mean, I was lucky and blessed that we were able to do that. But if you don't have a connection, and Kristen and I were talking about this before we came on the air, it's really difficult. And you're feeling all this pressure to make a decision, and it's a big, life-changing decision.
In 48 hours?
In 48 hours, sure. Yeah. I mean, and that the hospital, frankly, at that point, again, there are no bad players here, but the hospital's interest is that mom medically is not need. She's hospital stay is not needed for her, so they need to clear a bed for an appropriate patient, and they are in order to do that, they put pressure on. This happens to all of our clients. They put pressure on the family. You have to make a decision to move right away. Nursing homes have an interest in this. They have beds they maybe don't need to fill or need to fill. They're looking at the finances. Most nursing homes would rather have a private pay patient rather than a Medicaid patient. And all of this enters into the equation, and it just struck me how reductive this is of a person's whole life history, where you're just forced into this little square box.
And what's the most important lesson? Because as you say, you're fortunate to have this connection. You got things resolved. Things have gone pretty well. But you think about everybody who maybe doesn't. What's the most important lesson, and what do you want people to take away when they go out in a couple of weeks and this event offers some chance at the Elder Law Fair?
Well, I really think you have to do your homework. And if there's, if you have an inkling that a spouse or a parent may need nursing home care in the future, go out and visit nursing homes. Start getting an idea of what is out there and where you may want your spouse or mom or dad to be, so that you have some idea when this list is presented to you, you can start crossing out or circling. It sounds odd to spend time visiting nursing homes, but I think that's really important.
I don't even know if odd is. I would describe it as it's difficult emotionally, because right now they may be in good enough health to be home.
That's right.
And most people want to be home.
All people
want
to be
home. In the same way that my mother does not want to talk about finances.
Right.
We talk about wills. We talk about, care directives. But my mother is going to live to 279 years old, apparently, and just doesn't want to talk about it. And then I can't imagine what it would be like if I said, hey, do you want to go take a look at nursing home? She would look at me and say, why?
My mom was the same way. Very, very stubborn. Refused to move anywhere.
I love your mom, by the way.
Pardon?
I love you. I love you, mom. I just want her to know, in case she's listening, she's teaching. She's back in Cleveland. But I love you if you're listening to the podcast. But I want you to occasionally let us go out and address these things. It's tough, Rick. It's really hard emotionally for families.
Oh, absolutely. And that struck me. And I tell you, we're struck as practitioners by this, too. I mean, I'm sure this is the truth for Kristen and for Catherine. We have our days are filled with crying daughters and crying spouses who just are at wit's end because they've played out the string as long as possible at home, and now something has to happen. It's very, very emotional, and I just wish there was a better way of handling, as a society and as a community, this whole transition process.
All right. So we're going to take some of your phone calls as we go throughout the hour, but you should know that what is coming up 2 weeks from today is free, open to the public, and I would love for Kristen and Catherine to tell us more about what you can expect if you want to go out to Monroe County's annual Elder Law Fair in 2 weeks. So why don't you tell us what's coming up, what people need to know, how they can attend, who it's really designed for, and then I've got some questions about how the landscape may be changing. But go ahead, Catherine. Why don't you start?
Okay, so the Elder Law Fair is open to the public, it's free, and it is intended for anyone who could use this information. And that means that it's not just for people who are getting older, getting sicker, that stereotype that you might have in mind of who this information is for. No, it's for anybody, because it's going to affect all of us. Either it's going to happen to your family or it's going to happen to you, that you need to know your legal options. And so this is free information. It starts at 7:45 a.m. on October 16th. You can call 585-371-8429 if you'd like to register. Again, that's 585-371-8429. We'll have various topics. So we'll have estate planning, we'll have information about long-term care, estate administration, adult guardianship, Medicare, Medicaid, consumer debt issues, Social Security, disability, the list goes on. And we'll also have free consultations with local attorneys.
When it comes to legal assistance, people may need it or for their parents or for their families for a number of things. And I think it's important to point out, Catherine, that occasionally you can get that. Sometimes that feels like a barrier that I'll never be able to afford.
Exactly. And that is why I'm here today, to get the message out that there are free resources in this community. So I myself am one of the lawyers in this community who works for free. I don't get paid by my clients. I work for a nonprofit, and we're out there and we want to help you, but you have to come to us. We offer, in particular, powers of attorney. Powers of attorney are one of the most powerful tools that you can use to take charge of your future. And if we can get everybody who's feeling well right now to think through with how they would like things to go for themselves when they're not feeling so well, then that will be a victory for us.
Okay. Kristen, what do you want people to know about this issue, in particular what's coming up?
Well, I think that Catherine makes a really good point about powers of attorney. The one thing that people sometimes think is, you know, they're in that crisis mode, they're in the hospital, they need to get to a nursing home, and they think it's too late to do anything. All I can do is hand over everything I own and do whatever they tell me. But it's never too late to do planning. And if you're talking about doing planning in advance, is make sure you have that power of attorney in place so that someone can step in and act for you and make sure that you're being taken care of and make decisions for you if you're in a position where you can't do it. And I've had so many clients tell me, well, I don't need that now, so I'll do it later. The problem is, if you wait until you need it, you're no longer able to sign it, and now you can't have anybody put in place to take care of things for you. And so I think that the Elder Law Fair is just a great resource for you to come out and find out what else you don't know. So the main problem is people, you don't know what you don't know until someone explains it to you. And that's the only way that you can advocate for yourself, is to know you want to be the person to put in place who's going to act for you. Don't wait until somebody else does it for you, because now it's whoever they decided, not who you decided.
And I think online at monroecountyelders.eventbrite.com if you want to see more about what's coming up in 2 weeks. monroecountyelders.eventbrite.com. I know Lori's going to want to weigh in with a lot of this stuff. What I want to do is take our first phone call that's related to some of the comments that we've heard already, and invite our listeners, if you want to call the program with questions or comments as we talk about handling the aging process, questions on perhaps legal issues, legal assistance, and the like. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. This is Kate in Rochester first. Go ahead, Kate.
Hi, Evan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that your caller had mentioned that all of the players out there were good, and I would just share that our experience was that we had a facility that we had a crisis point. We had to go Medicaid pending. We had to make a decision on a long-term care facility. It's absolutely true. If you can work a network or connection, they can make a huge difference in getting in and understanding what you're going to get. I would emphasize that you really need, especially if you're children of a parent going in, understand what the care plan needs are and understand what the facility will allow and not allow. We ran into issues where they outsourced all of their nursing care. We ran into huge issues with care plan, dangerous situations, medications that we didn't get heads up on that were being instructed. You lose your opportunity to use your physician. It really was a heartbreaking situation and ended up being a negative outcome when, if we could do it all over again, I would have pushed very hard for a different facility. And again, you're put in a very tough spot where you have to make a decision. And I would just say, really understand what your parent needs or what those things are and look at every possible opportunity. The other thing I would say for veterans that we had no idea about but happened to run across it from another person in an assisted living, there is veteran benefits for widows, and a lot of people don't know about it. It takes about 6 months to get and do the paperwork, but if you're looking for income or you're running out of income, there is some other benefits to look at. And even the ombudsman that we hired, and there were people that through the friendly home and different people that were sourced to help you out with that, a lot of people didn't know about that. So we were lucky and being able to get that. But I would just say, understand the care plan and what you're looking for. I understand the St. John's model, the Eden Project is a fabulous model that's coming. Much more, it's dignity, it's independence, it's recognizing that anyone that has a special needs situation really needs that care. So that's all I wanted to add, but thank you.
Yeah, Kate, thank you for the phone call. Let me go around the table. Lori, I'll start with you. There's a lot there, and I wonder if that echoes some of the experience that you've had in the system. What do you think?
Well, first I wanted to say that it is great when people have a wonderful experience. In my case, in a five-star system, my mother was made a quadriplegic, paralyzed from the chest down within 3 weeks of her entry into a rehab facility. I think that having gone through the process of admitting relatives to nursing homes, I will totally agree that they sort of force your hand within minutes. And if you have money, you can negotiate a way into a so-called higher quality nursing home. My take for me is what happens to people once they've entered into a nursing home, and that the Department of Health does not do adequate oversight, that people suffer and dread going into a nursing home throughout this country, and you have to ask why. And you also have to ask, how is it that there can be a star system that says nursing homes that are of one quality, two quality, three quality exists? And what is wrong with that system? That system is wrong because it simply shows the systemic problems within the Centers for Medicaid Services, that the bar is set so low for a standard of care that you have to, in their eyes, set a scale of 1 to 5. There should be no 1. There should be no 2. There should be no 3. And so what I'm hoping is that your show will illuminate, because everyone sees every week a horror story of what happens to people in nursing homes. There's some great people in there. The federal government does not do mandatory minimum staffing requirements. That means 2 people can be watching over 30 people.
Is that number one? What's your short checklist of what
my short checklist is? You get in a mandatory minimum requirement of staffing so that people are toileted, they're turned, the call buttons are answered, their basic dignity is taken care of. You cannot have 2 people overseeing 30 very needy residents. So the federal government has refused, including our state legislature here, has refused to pass such a law, because to them it would burden a nursing home with financial hardship.
All right. And we'll continue to talk about some of the changes, because Lori's talking about what she thinks government can do on the state level, perhaps the federal level, but changes could be coming. Especially with the new administration and the Congress pursuing possible changes. We're going to talk about those things coming up here. Let me just ask our other guests to weigh in on what they heard from the caller. Catherine, you want to weigh in on some of that too?
Sure, Evan. Yeah, I think it's really important that folks know about the benefits that are available to them, and that is one of the kinds of advice that you can get from legal services attorneys. The caller mentioned veterans benefits, but there are other benefits as well. And so if you're finding yourself entering a new bracket of income or resources where you're not used to being a low-income person and you need advice, know that there are resources here, especially in Monroe County. And also those same resources. So if you are somebody who's Medicaid eligible, you may be able to age in place. If you get home health aid service and you plan in advance, you may not have to do the shortlist evaluation for nursing home care. But that's if you take planning into your hands. So please do.
Okay. Kristen?
The one thing I want to echo is the idea of the caller mentioned hiring an ombudsman. There are geriatric care managers out there that are just invaluable in planning for your future and making sure to help you get the care that you need where you need it to manage your care. And the sooner you get in touch with one and plan with them what you want for your future, that's another way that you can ensure that you're going to get the care that you need and want in the place that you want it.
Okay. And Rick?
I want to be careful that I don't demonize nursing homes. I think there are many fine facilities actually in the area, and it's incredibly tough work for all of the staff there, for the nurses. Having said that, it's, again, going back to my comment, it's important to visit the facilities or potential facilities in the area. There are many facilities that do, in fact, outsource their staff, and so you have rotating staff. Others don't. Go in, don't take a tour. Show up just unannounced, walk in and say, is this a place I can see mom or dad at? Or get me the hell out of here right now.
Sure.
I mean, you'll have that kind of reaction. And then talk to the staff. Are they happy? Do they seem upbeat? Or are they morose and kind of going about, dragging about their work? Are families engaged with patients? These are all important observations that you can make upon a visit.
That you don't want to have to make in 48 hours.
Right.
Go ahead, Lori.
But this leads us to the question, finally. What about the poor people that have to end up into a one or two or three facility? Hypothetically, let's say that. And I'm not disputing that there are wonderful people in these homes. What I am simply going along with is what I have heard from my website, what is sent to me every day in newspapers, the failings of the Department of Health to do adequate oversight, the low standard of care that is given to people in need of care. So how can you say to a person you belong in a one-star system, which has had so many problems, and say that is acceptable? That just to me is not an acceptable proposition.
I see actually two very different but I think related and important things here, which is that what Rick is saying is the current setup in the system, if you're proactive, you're going to be less caught off guard if there's a fall, if there's an accident, if you are in that 48-hour crunch, if you have had a chance to visit, because you will find facilities, especially if you have means, and that, yes, this is a conversation about privilege because money plays here, that you're going to be more comfortable in. I hear Lori saying, true, but let's create a system where it's more egalitarian, where we have better access for everybody, maybe whether it's funding, whether it's a number of different things here. I think those are related, but right now the system is what it is. Lori is looking for the changes at different levels of government that are probably out there that could make this better, and our guests are helping you navigate what is going on with the system now. And I'm getting a lot of email and phone calls, people saying, I wish I would have known X. So let's continue working through those. I want to grab Karen in Rochester, has that exact experience. Go ahead, Karen.
Okay, so this is good because I could take some notes, so I'll speak a little bit fast. So we had to bring my mother here from Schenectady. She suffered a stroke. She was not paralyzed in any way, but she did lose almost all of her sight. And so we couldn't leave her. So we brought her, we put her in a very good home. My sister was aware of geriatric stuff, and it was a very good home. I do want to say that the staff and the nurses and the aides, they're individuals and they'll react individually as well. So for instance, my mom was not an easy patient, and I think you have to really put that into context as well. So when my mom got back from the hospital, one of the main aides wouldn't actually even put a blanket on her. And I said, why won't you put a blanket on her? She said, because I don't like your mother. And I said, well, in any case, I you have to pick your battles. That one I did report to the nursing administrator because it's just not okay. They still have to be trained as professionals. So I went and got a blanket and put it on my mom, and this is a very high-level facility. The other thing I just want to say is my mom had the money. She went through $200,000 in 19 months. One of the things I was never told by an elder attorney about power of attorney is that when your parent dies, so does the power of attorney. So I thought I'd have it to be able to, you know, resolve any leftover finances. Fortunately, a friend told me, and so I made sure I got put on my mom's bank account so that I would have that effective power of attorney to finish paying off what needed to be paid off. And also, if you get the funeral home and all of that set up ahead of time and your money is put in escrow, that really helps a lot. So one of the things I say is my sister and I, we were very involved, talk with the aides, talk with the nurses, let them know you're on their side. And in our case, because my mom was difficult, we admitted we know she's difficult, and we're with you. We'll do whatever we can. And then I just want to say I have some doubts personally about the doctors that are at these nursing homes. Mm. I don't know if they consider this the bottom of the barrel, but we did have a doctor, my sister, who was with my mother by day. I was with my mother in the evening. Asked him to come and see her because she was wheezing and short of breath. And then he did not. He just went home. And he said, well, he knew he didn't. And that night, I was there. She still was wheezing. I went to the nursing station, said, this is not my mom's typical symptoms. I'm half the way home in a snowstorm, and I get called that she's being rushed to the hospital. In the end, she had major congestive heart failure, and as a result of that, she had a heart attack. And had he come to see her, she could have been put on diuretics immediately.
All right, Karen.
So I just really think there's a lot of things to be aware of and to be on top of. That's all.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I am certainly sorry about your experience. Laura, I know you want to start. Go ahead.
Evan, may I say that fortunately, we're hearing from people who actually tend to their family members. There are so many, and I had a front row seat for 3 years to watch, of people who are just alone and languishing in nursing homes who have no one to speak for them and who have no one to watch out their medications, their care plans. And this is more common than the other way around. Lots of times on Mother's Days, Father's Days, that's when people show up, or the High Holy Days or something like that. But almost the majority of people in nursing homes do not have people watching over them from the outside, and that can bring a lot of pain and anguish to that person. Washington State has the most advanced method of keeping people at home where they are located, and it is cost-effective, and the patients live longer, and to keep them out of nursing homes. That's the ultimate goal. But if you have to go to a nursing home, you know, you want to have a standard of care that will take care of you.
Let me ask Catherine Adamidis a question. She is a staff attorney at Legal Assistance of Western New York. You know, Karen brought up some of the things she wished she had known about the process. Here's an email from a listener named Whitney who says, putting assets into a trust is an important option. My mother decided to do that a few years ago. Her house and assets are all protected if she ever decided to go into a nursing home. How often does that come up? And, you know, what would you advise listeners to kind of think about with their family members for themselves, you know, as this process is kind of underway?
If there's one thing that I could say, it's please get your legal advice from an attorney. Because what happens in these communities with people going through the same thing, they think that the advice that's going to help them is the same advice. And so that's not always the case. There are a lot of different kinds of trusts out there with a lot of different purposes. That, you know, one caller mentioned a joint account. I would caution you against joint accounts until you know what you're doing. There are some tools that are generally pretty safe. Irrevocable burial trusts are tools that are generally pretty popular and pretty safe. It's a way to move your money so that you can pay for your final expenses in advance and have that not count toward your resources for Medicaid. But there's not really going to be a one-size-fits-all piece of advice for people because it's going to be based on your personal circumstances, financially and otherwise.
Okay. You want to jump in there too, Christine?
Yeah, I just want to say that with respect to trust and protecting assets, people sometimes get a little bit overzealous and they think, well, I'll put all my money in a trust and it's all protected and now I can qualify for Medicaid. Well, you just took all your money away from you and now you have no money to assist you to get the care that you want if it's something that Medicaid wouldn't cover. And so sometimes you have to be careful who you're getting your advice from, what kind of, like Catherine said, what kind of trust you're setting up. And don't put yourself in a position where, great, you've protected all your assets for your kids and you've done nothing to protect yourself.
Yeah, also, if you put all your money into a trust and then present yourself to a nursing home and say, hey, all my money's in a trust, take me. The nursing home is not going to accept you as a patient because they're looking then at a straight Medicaid patient. There has to be a really a balance of assets and if there's a trust agreement that normally has to be disclosed to a nursing home, and then their tentacles are going to be up about whether there has been any other type of gifting that may impact their financial decision on whether to accept a patient or not. Because frankly, nursing home admission is all about bed availability, whether there are beds the nursing home has to fill, and money at that point. The system fails the middle class and people who don't have money. Those are the people who are most hurt in this process because those people don't have $100,000 or $200,000 to privately pay for a year or so before they go on Medicaid. People who present as straight Medicaid patients, they're in that bind of where do I go? Because a nursing home does not have to accept you. They can say no.
All right. So listeners, I know you've got more questions if you are on the phone. George and Webster, Jane calling. We're going to get you in just a second. We've got more emails to read. And one of the things that Rick just brought up, Rick Marchese is a partner at Woods Obiett Gilman. He just brought up Medicaid. After our only break of the hour, we're going to ask our panel what changes they see possibly coming. If there are cuts in Medicaid, how could that impact this process? And what else is on the horizon that you should know about that could impact you or your family, maybe your parents, maybe all of us someday? I think it was Andy Rooney who said, you know, I did get old. And if you're lucky, it will happen to you too. But we would like you to be able to have the best standard of care possible. And that's what we're talking about. 2 weeks from today is an event that we'll tell you a little bit more about as we go throughout the hour, but it's the Monroe County Elder Law Fair. And it's free, and that's from 7:45 in the morning to 1 o'clock at Temple Brith Kodesh. We'll tell you more about how to get registered for that as well. So let's get that only break of the hour and come back to your phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, Jeremy Richmond joins me. He's a neuropharmacologist, and he is the father of a 6-year-old girl who was killed in the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. He will talk to us about the impact of mass shootings on communities. Then in our second hour, the Image Out Film Festival is back. It showcases films and other creative works that promote LGBTQ arts and cultural experiences. Talk to you Tuesday. Welcome back to the program. If you want to get registered, you can do that. The event we're talking about 2 weeks from today is free, and our phones are lit up. A lot of emails, a lot of questions and comments about this, because this impacts every family. And Catherine Adamidis, one more time on how people can get registered. I think there's a phone number they can call to do that.
Yes, Evan, there's a phone number. It's 585-371-8429. Again, that's 585-371-8429. Or you can register online at monroecountyelders.eventbrite.com.
Okay, so that's what we're talking about here. And before I come back to your phone calls, we'll finish the hour on your phone calls. I just want our guests to tell us what might be on the horizon when it comes to changes. Rick, you brought up Medicaid. We're hearing about possible Medicaid cuts in various forms and iterations of healthcare law, et cetera. How would that impact this system?
I think Medicaid cuts could drastically negatively impact our ability to keep seniors at home. Currently, the Medicaid program is structured in New York State so that there are a lot of Medicaid dollars that can be paid toward home care to providers, transportation providers, aides, through a variety of different programs that New York State has set up. What was initially proposed by the Trump administration were across-the-board cuts to every state for Medicaid program benefits. If that occurred, the Trump administration was giving states the option to seek waivers of federal requirements that would allow states to impose more strict eligibility requirements that could serve to cut down the number of people who would be eligible for Medicaid. I don't think we'll see that in New York State, but I know what Albany is greatly concerned about is the lack of flow of federal dollars, which could ultimately lead to cuts across the board in the Medicaid program. So we have to wait and see. As an elder law community of attorneys, we're very concerned about this because it would directly impact the advice we give to clients and more importantly, impact people's ability to keep mom or dad or their wife or husband at home.
Kristen Johnson's a partner at Pelletier & Johnson. They specialize in Medicaid and long-term care planning. Anything you want to add on that?
I don't know if there's much more to say other than people are concerned that, you know, it's going to impact their ability to qualify for Medicaid in the nursing home context as well. And I don't think that, at least right now, we're going to see much change there. It is more of a, it's a greater impact on the home care environment.
Okay. And Lori Cash, who's an advocate for nursing home reform, has her eyes on a possible other reform that is of concern to you. Tell us about that.
Yes. In 2016, CMS made a decision that said you could not force, in order to be admitted to a nursing home, to sign an agreement that said you would preemptively give up your right to sue a nursing home. And that would be a right that you would have to have because you don't know what the future holds for you. And with the Department of Health always failing, on, for the most part, citing nursing homes, there's been endless reports on this, including the Comptroller's report in February of 2016, which I was a member of, that they are not doing their job. So in order to hold nursing homes accountable, it's not like you're doing a lottery. It is not fun to have a lawsuit. It's painful. It's grueling. It brings up all the wounds of what your loved one went through, but it holds and brings into the light of day what goes on in these places, and it holds them accountable. And now what the Trump administration wants to do and the nursing home industry is to take away that right so that you sign away any right, and if something happens to you, you are forced to arbitrate, and it just goes into oblivion. It is never reaches the light of day. And so that is a very, very, very serious, grim, dark spot on the horizon if that does indeed pass. And I would urge you to contact CMS, your legislatures, and see that this bill is not reversed.
All right, let me grab some phone calls. Now, Jane, next up. Go ahead, Jane.
Hi. I'm a geriatric care manager, been in business for about the last 20 years, and I'm so enthralled with what you're all talking about. But using an example of clients that we have served, you know, just recently, please let people know that even if they don't have a lot of money or any money, a geriatric care manager can still assist them for a fraction of what an attorney would potentially charge them in some instances. Having an attorney is the absolute best first step, but that's only part of the situation. The other thing that people really need to know is that there is help out there, that there is the ability for people to, you know, seeing an attorney is only part of the first step to be completely successful. Working with a geriatric care manager who knows this half is necessary to be successful in this position. State what your expectations are for the nursing home and explain your specific care concerns and what you want as communication with the facility. Legal advice is paramount and also very important, but working with a geriatric care manager who knows the healthcare system and what the steps are needed to obtain success is also important. A recent client needed medical and cognitive care, and family didn't really know what to do. He had been in the hospital several times. The healthcare system didn't know what to do. He had a house to sell and needed someone to step in and do all of these things. I agree, there's no one-stop shopping. Understanding the terminology of healthcare is the same as understanding what the legal terminology is. Looking at the value of what someone's home is, being able to access Veterans Administrations, and making sure your paperwork is up to order is all very important. Having a real estate agent involved is also a very good idea. So I want to say that Rochester has a tremendous amount of help, a tremendous amount of knowledge and expertise in helping seniors. People just need to know about it.
Jane, thank you for the phone call. I'm going to turn to Catherine Adamidis to respond first of all. What do you think?
Of course. All the services you're going to get will be interdisciplinary if you have a good plan in place. But if you are going to make that plan, if you are going to get the information that you will rely on to make that plan needs to start with a solid understanding of the legal framework into which you're entering. And I'll defer to my colleagues in the private bar about the best way to manage your assets and who to have involved and where to get that information. But for sure, if you don't know why you're doing something, and you're just taking somebody's expertise for granted because they're in a role that makes them a professional and you're a layperson, that's not the place to get your legal information. You got to start with the law. You got to start with a lawyer.
There, I believe it was you. It was you, Catherine. I was reading, and producer Megan Mack sent me a note on the top five hidden legal issues of aging. And on this list is something that comes up a lot, which is the idea of gifting. You know, just put your name on the deed to the house, boom, done. You get it out of the way. It belongs to somebody else now. It's not your problem. So tell me a little bit about gifting and where people might go wrong with this.
So this happens all the time. People see it as a shortcut in estate planning. Oh, you know, I'll put my kid on the deed, and my kid will automatically get the house. They can avoid probate. Everybody's always trying to avoid probate, right? That's a good idea. No, that can be a terrible idea. There's this thing called a five-year look-back period for Medicaid, and if you've given a gift in the past 5 years before you start relying on Medicaid to pay for your nursing home care, you may be creating a penalty for yourself, which can result in a debt that ultimately you're defending in a lawsuit. So be careful.
Go ahead, Kristen. Yeah.
Can I just add to that the other thing people don't consider is when you are adding your kids to your house, if your kids run into a problem, whether it is death, they get sued, they go through bankruptcy, they actually have an ownership interest in your house, which can create a whole new host of issues that you weren't anticipating. And so it's a problem for Medicaid planning, but it also can be, even if Medicaid never enters the picture, you can expose your house to your children's issues, if you will, unintentionally.
So it can be a wise thing to do, but there are possible pitfalls, it sounds like. Okay, see? Catherine, you want to let us, Catherine, by the way, is an attorney at Legal Assistance of Western New York. You want to let people know, is that article out there, the top five hidden legal issues of aging?
Yes, it is. It's on our website at the Legal Assistance of Western New York website. It's lawny.org, lawnewyork.org.
Yeah, that was a big red flag for me because that's something that my own family has discussed in various ways. George and Webster next on the phone. Go ahead, George.
Well, let me be honest with you. The lady taking the phone calls was very astute. She said, are you the same George that called on the first half of your broadcast?
Well, it's nice to hear from you again, George.
And I am. But I will tell you this, I've listened to you many, many months, and I'm a first-time caller. But here's what I want to say. You asked, Evan, what can you do as a person?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to give you some idea on that subject. If you can at all possible do what I'm going to say, try to do it. And I do admit that most people aren't going to be able to do it. But my mother and father served as a very good example to me. My mother and father, I grew up in West Brighton, not Brighton. We were considered river rats. I remember growing up there on Remington Parkway at times where there wasn't enough food in the house, and my Aunt Mary would bring us food. But nevertheless, my dad worked at Kodak on a production job, didn't make a lot of money. My mother went back to work at Rochester Products, and my sisters were still at home at the time, but they were teenagers. And my mother saved money. And as a result of that, she was forced in her later years to go into Bretland Woods, which she spent a year and a half. And from there, she went to St. John's. And she had the money to do it. So if there's people out there that can sock some money away for your later years, stand up and do it.
Okay, George, thanks for the phone call. I mean, this is just the wisdom of saving kind of call. Rick, you want to add to that?
I agree with the wisdom of saving. The problem, though, now is that the private pay cost at nursing homes is about $13,000 per month. People are living longer and longer. So when I started out doing this or thinking about Medicaid 20, 25 years ago, the average stay in a nursing home would have been a year and a half. It's double that now or even more. So yes, savings and spending all of your savings is an option. The problem is, what is really enough?
$13,000 a month?
Yes.
What was it 25 years ago?
Oh, it was maybe 4,000, 5,000. So that's not even the top end in this community. That's probably an average of what a nursing home cost to pay privately. So that's $160,000 a year. You know, that starts adding up really quickly.
Yeah, and the goal is to have a good number of years with that. I mean, so that's a lot of planning. Yeah. So, George, I take the point. It's a great reminder. We always want to be able to do that, and that's a great position to be in. That's a lot of money. Wow, that is it's a lot more than I think a lot of people think about until all of a sudden a family member is in the midst of it. Let me grab one more phone call. Cindy in Rochester next. Go ahead, Cindy. Hi, Cindy. Go ahead. Hey, Cindy, do me a favor, Cindy. Call back just because the phone call was breaking up and starting to cut out there. So if you're just joining us, we've been talking about what you need to know about helping in the aging process for yourself, often for a parent or a family member, a spouse. And there's an event coming up 2 weeks from today. And what I want our guest to do is remind you one more time what's coming up 2 weeks from today and what the various focuses are going to be. It's 7:45 to 1 p.m. But Kristen Johnson, if you go to this kind of an event, how much time do people typically spend at an elder law fair like this?
So most people that attend come for the entire thing. So there's essentially three sessions, and each session there are three different topics that will be discussed. And every session, I think, has at least one attorney speaking, and then usually one non-attorney speaking with them about various topics, estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, long-term care planning, Medicare, really anything that you can think about in the elder law field, including guardianships. And most people, they stay for the whole thing. Occasionally you have somebody leaving, but you can pick and choose which sessions you attend. When you register, you can pre-register for the various sessions. And then depending on attendance and what kind of room there is, you can switch last minute if needed.
Okay, yeah. So likely you're going to have a chance to choose among workshops and roundtables. I mean, the one that stands out probably to a lot of people is Medicaid in plain English. That's nice. They don't typically do Medicaid in plain English.
That's true.
So you can register in advance, and you can do that in a couple of ways. You can call 585-371-8429. That's 371-8429, or jump online, MonroeCountyElders.eventbrite.com. And again, that's free. They just want to know that you're coming to plan for that. That's coming up in a couple weeks from now. And we're only down to our last couple of minutes, so 30 seconds each. Some final thoughts, and I'll go around the table. We got to keep it tight. Lori, what's top of mind for you as we go throughout the rest of 2017 and 2018 on these issues?
My final thoughts are that once you've gone through the doors and gone through that process, what's going to happen to you after that process, whether you live 6 months, 3 years, that you get the best care possible. And so my hope is that you will have many shows like this, and obviously a broader show that talks about what is going on in nursing homes for people who are having problems and what can be done to bring up the standard of care. There's a wonderful group called Elder Justice. They really seek to meet with people who have had problems in nursing homes, who want to change them, who want to make them feel better. I would love it if your show had more of these programs on so that we can make it rare that anyone ever has to say they did not get the proper care that they deserved at a nursing home.
Laststopmovie.com, more on what Lori's doing.
My final thought, Evan, is to tell listeners that you don't know what you don't know. We've only begun to scratch the surface. Please get free information. It's available to you. We didn't even get into employer law that applies if you've got home health aides. You're subject to obligations you may not realize. So avail yourself of the free information, and remember that there are free lawyers in the community who can help you if you can't afford one.
And you're online where, Catherine?
At lawnewyork.org.
Lawnewyork.org.
LAWNY.org.
That's Legal Assistance of Western New York. Final thoughts, Kristen Johnson.
So if nothing else, make sure that you take your life into your own hands, plan in advance, come to the Elder Law Fair to find out, as Catherine said, find out what you don't know so you can take care of yourself.
And Rick Marchese, thanks for sharing your story, Rick. Some final thoughts from you, 20 seconds.
Yes, let's get together as a community and work to solve this issue of transitions for our seniors. They've cared for us their whole life. We have to do a better job than we're doing right now.
That's a beautiful way to end the conversation. Thanks to all of our guests talking about the system as it exists, maybe the system as we should hope that it will become. And I want to thank all of them for being here. Thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Audrey Sample, interning with us, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, a peaceful one, we hope, and we'll talk to you Tuesday on Member-Supported Public Radio.